Good morning. My name is Jorge Montoya. I'll be talking for Chris O'Leary. This is work on one of his areas of expertise and one of his passions. And I'll be describing two distinct social networks or sexual networks, one of an index case at a bar and another of an index case who primarily met partners online. First of all, social network analysis really works well with sexual networks because we know that infections come from unambiguous relations. If you have sex with somebody, it's clearly a contact. Core transmitters are easily identified, as well as bridges. And so it's easier to determine the best way to disrupt the chain of transmission in such a network. And we can also use other data to really refine a network, including morbidity, risk behaviors, and specific sexual practices. The methodology is quite straightforward. It's very much how we do our field work. We elicit contacts from an index case. We find these contacts and we elicit contacts from them. We keep doing this until we get to a point where we aren't able to locate any more cases that are members of this network. In addition, of course, we are careful to look at the critical period for syphilis to determine the likelihood that a member in the network was exposed to syphilis. And then this data is entered into a program called UCINET that produces a graphical result, which is really the unit of analysis in sexual networks. So the first network I'll talk about is the Internet Sexual Network. This is an index case infected with syphilis with 66 partners between July and August. This particular person had two prior syphilis infections, so at the time of this investigation, he was infected for a third time with syphilis. Field staff investigation led to about 319 partners, 280 of which were anonymous. For those partners that we had information on, they were all met online. There was limited data on demographics and drug use, so we didn't really incorporate that into the network. The average age of the members in this network was 37.4, and most had a prior history of syphilis, 2.2 previous syphilis infections on average. And there were 17 bridges that were clearly identified. This is what the network looked like. This is our index case here. Cases with red nodes denote individuals who are infected both with HIV and syphilis. Blue nodes are just syphilis infections. Green nodes are just HIV infections. And black nodes denote individuals who are, at the time of this investigation, were not infected with HIV or syphilis. And then we have a series of teal nodes to represent anonymous partners that we were unable to locate, and some white nodes also for partners we were unable to locate. We had no information on their status. But clearly, this is a very highly centralized network. The core transmitter is quite apparent, and the bridges to and from the core transmitter and to other subclusters are quite apparent as well. It's a very complex, very dense network. So let's look at this network in detail for a little bit. 3% had no disease or were out of the critical period. Likelihood of infection was not there. Another 3% only had primary and secondary syphilis. 2% were infected with only HIV. And 15 individuals, or 5%, were infected both with syphilis and HIV in this network. And 279 individuals we had no information on. After one degree of exposure, that is sex with an infected person in this network, 24, 8%, had no known exposures. 36, or 11%, were exposed to syphilis only. 44, or 14%, were exposed to HIV only. And about 68% were exposed to both syphilis and HIV. That's 217 folks. Theoretically now, if after 2 degrees of exposure or having sex with somebody who had sex with somebody in this network, the exposure to both syphilis and HIV was 100% for the members. Now, in social network or sexual network analysis, we like to use the word removal, so bear with me, but it's just a word. So what if we could intervene with three actors and work with them? If we, in this particular network, remove three actors, we basically see a drop of 50% in the members and 17 unconnected clusters. So what we do successfully is we isolate individuals who were not infected with syphilis or HIV. And then we isolate individuals who are infected with HIV or just syphilis or just HIV. So just by removing three actors, we can see that we've drastically interrupted the chain of transmission in this particular network. This is the Barr sexual network. This is of an index case who was infected with syphilis, had 19 partners from July through August. And let me just take a moment to say that we were able to get this information only because the index cases were very, very cooperative with us, worked with our field workers, and really provided a lot of information. Otherwise, it would not have been possible. And that's going to become more relevant toward the end. Oh, sure. Can you guys hear me now? Verizon, I hate them. All right. So the field staff investigation led to 123 partners, 102 of which were anonymous. The bulk of the partners were met at bars. There were very few that were met online, and there was some information in drug use, but again, not enough to really include in the network analysis. In this network, the members skewed much younger, average age 24.3. Also had a lot of members that had a previous history of syphilis infection, 1.4 previous syphilis infections, and there were five clear bridges that were identifiable. Much less dense network, less players, but again, clearly you can identify the core transmitter infected with just syphilis, and there was some overlap between the core transmitter and other subclusters in the network. And of course, way over here, serially, you can see someone who was infected with both syphilis and HIV as part of this network. So again, to characterize this network, 14% or 17 had no disease or contact during the critical period. 3% or 2% had syphilis. No one had just HIV. One individual had syphilis and HIV. And 83% or 102, we had no information about. After one degree of exposure, sex with an infected person in the network, 69 or 58% had no known exposures. 50 individuals or 42% had syphilis only, and 11 or 9% had syphilis and HIV. And after 2 degrees of exposure, that is sex with somebody who had sex with somebody else in the network, 34% were exposed to syphilis and HIV, and 100% were exposed to syphilis. So again, after controlling for three actors here, we intervened and we worked with three individuals in this network, primarily the core transmitters. We would see a 79% drop in the membership and basically produce two unconnected clusters and effectively isolate the co-infected individual with syphilis and HIV. Okay, so implications. Well, what does this mean? Well, one possibility that was suggested is that we could prioritize our cases based on the venue where they find partners. And we would prioritize an internet case, for example, over a bar and club case. That's a possibility. Another is that we focus on the removal or working with cores and interrupting the chain of transmission. And typically, what I've noticed in the past with social network analysis or sexual network analysis is that we come up with these great ways to interrupt transmission in theory, but what do we do? How do we do this before the fact? Because this is all after the fact and all after weeks and weeks of field work and gathering lots of information to come up with these great pictures. One possibility is that we look at a proxy measure of core transmitters. And if we can identify what that proxy measure would be, we could work with core transmitters prior to infection occurring in a network like this. And one possibility is to look at reinfectors or people who have been reinfected with syphilis, perhaps conduct voluntary preemptive field visits with these individuals and develop client-centered interventions that work closely with these folks. So here's a table, and I want to just remind folks, our core transmitter in our internet network had been infected 3 times at the time of investigation. And so he represents probably 1 out of 101 individuals who had been infected 3 times prior. This is a frequency of folks, number of infections per group. So there were at least between January 1st, 2000 and October 31st, 2007, close to 6,000 individuals who had only been infected once. But as we go down this table, we see that there were 101 individuals who had been infected three times, 10 individuals who had been infected four times, and at least one individual who had been infected six times. So in our internet example, it's quite possible there are potentially 100 other networks like his, and we might consider using reinfectors as a proxy of identifying core transmitters, and then working with them on a continual basis, on a voluntary basis, perhaps doing monthly field visits with them to see how they're doing, or asking them if they want to be tested, eliciting partners, getting them into counseling programs that work for them, and looking at other cofactors that are affecting why they're having unsafe sex. And that's it. This is Chris O'Leary, Dr. Chris O'Leary. I hope he's not cringing wherever he's at, and I hope I did some justice to his talk. Thank you very much.